Good morning. It is 7:43 here on the Mighty 690 as we continue throughout this Wednesday. And joining us here for our Green Side Up program brought to you by Green Acres, we have Agent Adavin Rowling here from K-State Extension. Good morning, Adavin.
Good morning. How are you?
Hey, doing well. So we've got a real busy time of year coming up here. July is all hands on deck, I know, for those county fairs.
Yes, for sure. So the Cherryville Youth Fair kicks off this week, which I think you've already been out at the park talking to them a little bit.
Yep, sure have.
And then in 2 weeks, three of our county fairs in our district will kick off. So Wilson, Montgomery, and Labette County Fairs will get going. And then the Crawford County Fair will be that following week. So definitely July is a super busy month for us. So our 4-H agents kind of like they get the bulk of the fair work and kind of lead the charge along with the fair boards. We really appreciate all those volunteers. And then as an ag agent and then also our fax agents, we're there helping out as well and supporting however we can.
Fantastic. Well, that is great. And are you going to be helping out yourself, judging any particular items here coming up at some of these fairs?
So I actually won't be judging anything, but at the Montgomery County Fair, my main jobs for that fair is I run the livestock weigh-in. So the kids that are showing market livestock, so our cattle, sheep, goats, pigs, they weigh those animals in. So I'll be running the scales, checking them in, entering the animals' weights. And then once we have all the animals checked in, I meet with the superintendents and we decide how to break those classes, which that's just deciding we break the classes by weight. So you don't have, you know, a really small, like 220-pound pig, for example, showing against a 300-pound one. We like to keep the weights as close as possible in those classes. So we break them for a lightweight, middleweight, and a heavyweight class. So I'll be doing that, and those are kind of my main jobs, and then helping out wherever else is needed.
Very good. So it should be good as we get into this fair time. And I know a timely topic here, as we do have some of those rabbits and chickens going to the fair and that sort of thing. I know you wanted to talk about for anyone out there who has poultry or rabbits, trying to keep them cool this time of year.
Yeah, so we've definitely, the summer heat is here, which made me think about keeping our chickens and our rabbits cool. I remember when I was growing up, which I also grew up in the desert in southern Nevada, so it was a little bit different type of heat. But keeping, especially the rabbits, cool was always a really big deal. So a few things that people can think about to keep their rabbits cooler, especially, and if they're taking them to fairs or someplace to exhibit where maybe they won't have as comfy as a setup as they do at home, is starting to save those bigger water bottles or even those 2-liter soda bottles. So if you save those, rinse them out, fill them with water, and then freeze them, then you can take them out and put them in the cage with your rabbit, and it gives the rabbit something cool to lay up against and help them keep cool. The other thing that always works really great is if you have a small fan that you can place on their cage to help get that airflow moving. Sometimes you can find small fans in the camping section that are pretty easy to attach to the cage. Or nowadays, they make a lot of really cool different fans. They're called stroller fans for babies, but some of them have clips, some of them have bendable legs. So those would probably also be a good option that might be a little bit easier to attach to a cage to provide some good airflow for your rabbit. The other thing that I remember doing when I was in 4-H is I had a 4-H leader, and she would get they're like the sample squares of carpet from the flooring store that are just kind of like a foot by a foot or a foot by 2 feet. And she would soak those in water and then put them in her rabbit's cage so the rabbits could stretch out and lay on something cool and cool down as well. And then kind of switching gears for chickens, another big one is the airflow. So making sure if it's possible to have the coop's windows open so they're getting good airflow through the coop, especially for those hens that are going in the coop to lay eggs in their nesting boxes. I know over the years I've talked to a few people that randomly have a hen decide to get broody and really want to sit on eggs this time of year.
Oh yeah.
So we kind of try to discourage that as much as possible, because in the heat, if hens do that, it's really easy for them to get overheated. And then of course with all animals, just providing clean fresh water in a shaded area if possible that is convenient to them, to promote them drinking water. And then for chickens, if you provide them a really shallow pan, they can wade in that, and that will help them keep cooler. If you have chicks around, you'll probably want to put some bigger rocks in the bottom of that pan to help prevent the chicks drowning. Or if your chickens are in a more like free range setup, I know you don't want them probably scratching in your flower beds, but if you have maybe like a tree ring that you water occasionally, or you can kind of get that damp ground, the chickens will scratch around in that water to cool off as well.
So now if a chicken is broody, any tips on kind of discouraging that behavior?
So just collecting the eggs as much as possible, which I know can be a challenge when they're broody. Sometimes they get really protective. Yeah, they want to peck you. So if you wear a glove to protect your hands, or sometimes I would you take a stick and put the stick in first, and that would kind of distract the hen. She would be looking at the stick and I use my other hand to sneak in and get her eggs. That doesn't work on every chicken. Some are smarter than others and know what you're up to. But yeah, collecting the eggs as much as possible, getting her off the nest, out of that nest box as well. And then just watch them for signs of heat stress. So if they're laying down, panting heavy, for chickens, if they're holding their wings away from their body, those are signs that they're overheated and you need to get them to a cool, shady spot as fast as possible to get them cooled down.
Now, what about the rabbits? Anything that you might notice when it comes to heat stress on those?
Similar signs. So with all animals, that panting, the open mouth panting, rabbits also, you know, try to like, they'll stretch out and then just getting like really lethargic, not moving around as much.
Sure. Well, it's one of those things that we definitely want to keep an eye out here as we do go into those county fairs. And I know that's probably kind of the main push here when it comes to events, but anything else you want to hit on here when it does come to some of the events?
Yeah, we have a couple more events coming up. Let me pull them up real fast. So I know one, I remember that date off the top of my head. So the end of this month, July 29th, Wendy is hosting a livestock mortality management workshop. And this is kind of focused on, shallow burial, using carbon, to kind of manage when we have that unfortunate death loss in livestock. And this will be on-site demonstrations. It will start at 8:30 at the Southeast Research and Extension Center In Parsons, it is free to attend, and lunch will be provided thanks to the Bill House Grant. We do ask that you pre-register just to help with planning, and you can register online on our website under the events tab. You can find the information. That's wildcatdistrict.kstate.edu, or you can call our Altamont office at 620-784-5337. And then coming up this Friday, July 10th, our summer interns are hosting a scrip and scrap workshop at the Girard Extension office from 9 to 11 a.m. So this is a workshop for youth, and participants will learn basic lettering techniques, so like calligraphy, and being able to apply them to design personalized scrapbook pages and thank you cards that, you know, are fun and something different than just the basic ones you might find in the store. Supplies are provided, but they do ask that you pre-register. So 4-H kids that are getting ready for fair, after the fairs there's always a lot of thank you cards to write, so this could help you get a jump start on that.
Okay, very good. Well, David, what are we going to talk about in our next segment together?
Yeah, coming up in the next segment, we are going to talk a little bit about just blue-green algae. You may have been hearing more about it with a few cases in rivers and lakes in the area. So just what signs to watch out for when it comes to your farm pond. And then also just a little FYI on if you find any bats that are randomly laying on the ground, what could be going on with them.
All right, that's all coming up as our Green Setup program continues. We have David Rowling from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. Coming up, we'll have a check of news, then we'll get back into our Green Setup program brought to you by Green Acres right here on the Mighty 690. Right now, we have 71 degrees as we approach 8 o'clock.
Go off.
The world is changing. It's full of technology. How do you keep up? By tuning in to Tech Talk, Saturday mornings at 7:30. Charles Miller and Charles Mall will answer your questions Saturday mornings when you call 1-800-749-5936. Learn about all the new developments in technology and how it applies to you, your work, and your life. That's Tech Talk, 7:30 each Saturday on the Mighty 690 KGGF.
Good morning. It is 8:10 here on the Mighty 690 as we go throughout this Wednesday. And we're going to be turning the reins over to our intern, Katie Zwan, who's going to be doing the rest of this interview here. But we have joining us here, Dave and Rowling and Katie Townsend on the line. So I'm going to go ahead and let Katie get things started here with us. So you've got the reins now.
Well, good morning. So, David, what is the topic today you're going to be talking about?
Good morning. In the second half here, I'm going to be actually talking about two different topics. So, I'm going to be sharing information from the Kansas Department of Health and Environment. They put out some information that I just thought was interesting about what to do if you happen to find a bat on the ground, which might be more common with the summer heat we've been experiencing. And then also I wanted to talk about blue-green algae and signs to look for in your pond.
And then we also have Katie Townsend who's on the line. So good morning to you, Katie.
Good morning. And I'm just going to kind of play into David's conversation a little bit. The stuff she has about bats is really interesting, and then I'll kind of jump in when she talks about some pond stuff here.
All right, so go ahead.
Okay, so David, back to you about bats.
Okay. So just really quick here, I thought this was interesting. The Kansas Department of Health and Environment shared it on their Facebook page. So during hot weather, bats, especially pups, which is what a young bat is called, and nursing mothers can become heat stressed. And when they become heat stressed, they will fall to the ground. And once they are on the ground, bats can't take off from the ground and they may need help to get going again. But it can be a little tricky with bats because while they are very important to our environment, they can transmit some diseases such as rabies. So it is important for people to stay safe if they do happen to find a bat on the ground and decide to help it out. So first, never touch a bat with your bare hands. So you want to make sure to wear really thick gloves, like good thick leather gloves, because bats can bite through really thin gloves, like more of the gardening cloth style gloves, or even like a towel if you have that handy. And then when you go to pick them up, once you have those heavy gloves on, move slowly and wait until the bat is still, because they might be, you know, pretty afraid. They don't know what's going on. So a frightened bat may try to defend itself by spreading its wings and then vocalizing, which is just it making some sounds protests. It's not sure what's going on. You're trying to help it, but it doesn't know that. So you'll want to gently contain the bat, and you can do this by placing a container, like a cardboard box or large coffee can, over the bat, and then carefully sliding a piece of cardboard or a sturdy lid underneath it. Just make sure that you don't pinch its feet or its wings, and then secure the lid. And then once you have done this, you can release the bat by placing it at least 5 feet above the ground on a tree or another elevated surface. And if you have a bat that you think is injured, or if it's still where you left it by the next morning, you can call your local wildlife rehabilitator to get some help for that bat. And I don't have that phone number with me at the moment, but if someone does happen upon this scenario, they can give me a call at the extension office. That number is 620-784-5337, and I can help get them in contact with a wildlife rehabilitator.
You know, it's crazy, like, during the summertime, you really don't, for me, I don't think of bats around, like, the area, but it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of, you like, I kind of forget about it.
Yeah, we do. It's kind of easy to forget about them because they're out most of the time during the night, and during the day, and even at night, they like to stay more in the shadows. So they're one of those animals that play an important role in the ecosystem, but we don't see them a whole lot.
Is there, like, a different kinds of breeds of bats we have around here?
There is just mainly one, and I am blanking on the name at the moment. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick.
David?
Yeah.
While you do that, does the office still have a list of people's names of certified nuisance wildlife handlers that you could share if somebody didn't want to touch the bat themselves and they just wanted to call and pay for somebody to come and try to help them out?
Yes, I do. So at the office, I have a list of everyone who is licensed through the Kansas Department of Wildlife as a nuisance wildlife controller is the technical name for that list there. And it does say where those people are at, so we can look through the list and find someone that is closest to the location where the bat is at. For example, I do know most of those people on the list are more interested in like our classic nuisance wildlife animals like raccoons or skunks or beavers. So they might not all be interested in helping out a bat, but that is definitely one avenue we could try as well. And so in Kansas, there are actually quite a few different types of bats around, but the most common is known as the little brown bat. They are about the size of a mouse, and they're the ones that are most often found here in eastern Kansas.
Oh, that's very interesting. I guess I'll be on the bat lookout, I guess.
Yeah, you'll have to let me know if you see any.
You know, people probably get mistaken, like, driving down the road later at night, that it's a bird or a bat, you know?
Yeah, they could be. So the little brown bat, for example, they tend to hang out the most in buildings and also sometimes attics, unfortunately. So that's one reason why we don't see them as much, is they're not very social. They tend to kind of stay hidden away and just do their own thing.
Blue. So you want to talk about blue-green algae today too, as well?
Yeah. So another topic that goes along with the summer heat that we're experiencing now is blue-green algae. So I know we've had a few occurrences of it around here in different lakes. I haven't heard of anyone having it in a farm pond yet. But just so folks know what to be on the lookout for is, like the name suggests, typically it's a really bright blue or green color. So it's going to be like the color of John Deere paint on the surface of your pond. And sometimes it also has a really strong odor as well. So while we call it blue-green algae, it's actually a bacteria. And this is why it's such a big concern. If you have it in a farm pond that livestock are drinking out of it, or why we see it talked about when it's in lakes that people are swimming in a lot, because that bacteria can actually be harmful to animals and people as well. And when the algae starts to die off is when that bacteria can release its toxins that can affect the nervous system of animals. So it will hit them really fast, usually so fast that we don't have time to treat the animal. So as you're out checking your livestock, also be sure to check your ponds. That way, hopefully you don't have a problem with blue-green algae, but if you do, you catch it as soon as possible. So sometimes it can be hard to tell between blue-green algae and regular green algae. So the regular green algae is filamentous algae. So it's like really stringy, has a mossy look to it. So if you notice algae in your pond and you're trying to figure out which one you have, you can actually do what we call a stick test. It's not super scientific. You just find a long stick and you stick it into your pond where the algae's at. And if you pull out your stick and it just has some really stringy olive green looking algae on it, then that is just our regular green algae. But if you pull that stick out and it looks like you've dipped that stick in a bucket of John Deere green paint, then that means that you have blue-green algae on your pond. And you can give me a call at the extension office if that's the case, and I can help walk you through getting your water tested to determine the level of toxins. But if possible, as soon as you notice blue-green algae on the pond, you want to, if you're able to, I know it's not always possible, but prevent animals from drinking out of the pond. Or if that's not possible, the next best option is if you have an extra water tank, to put that out there to hopefully get them drinking water out of the tank instead of from the pond.
Can it affect like fish and stuff in the pond as well?
So it's not harmful to fish that are in the pond. The only time it's a concern for fish is when it comes to treating that pond. So when we treat the pond for blue-green algae, we don't want to treat the whole pond at one time. We want to break it up into usually thirds and treat a third of the pond, wait about a week, and then treat the next third. And that's because with blue-green algae or with any type of pond weed, if we treat the pond all at one time and then those weeds die off at the exact same time, that can reduce the oxygen available to fish. And then that's when we end up with problems of a fish kill in a pond.
Gotcha. Well, Katie, do you have anything more that you would like to say?
No, all really great information. It kind of ties into what our livestock agent Wendy Powell's news article was here about 2 weeks ago, where she talked about the importance of scrubbing out your stock tanks a couple times a year. I think the moral of the story just boils down that, you know, livestock like us like clean, fresh water. And that's why the NRCS even has programs where you can take fencing and fence off a pond, use a flow to give them that pond water outside of that so that they're not trampling in that water. It just boils down to good, clean water is the best for us and for animals. So,
well, thank you, Katie. Well, Katie and David, do you guys have any events coming up that you would like to tell the community about?
Yeah, we do. So on July 29th, Wendy Powell will be hosting a livestock mortality management workshop. It will start at 8:30 in the morning at the Southeast Research and Extension Center in Parsons. So that's the big building on the corner of Highway 400 and Ness Road. Lunch will be provided thanks to the Bill House grant. And this workshop will be how to discover an innovative carcass disposal program. What materials are required for that, the benefits to it, drawbacks to it, and it will also include an on-site demonstration. So livestock mortality management is the part of raising livestock we never want to think about, but unfortunately we do have to deal with it at times. So this workshop will give people a lot of great information on another option of how to do that.
Do you have Wendy's contact info?
Yeah. So to register for that workshop, you can call the Altamont office at 620-784-5337. And then we also have some programs coming up that our interns will be doing. So on July 30th and 31st at the Altamont Extension office from 9 a.m. till noon, we will be doing Reading Makes Sense. Youth will explore key financial concepts while discovering the joy of reading. There is no cost for this workshop, but they do ask that you RSVP by July 28th by calling 620-784-5337. And Katie, I know our interns have a few others coming up. Are there any that I'm missing?
There are, but they're over in Girard. So if you're over Girard area, they have some photography and some scrapbooking and some fun things like that, and you can find those on our website. They're over that way.
Will any of these be on Facebook too?
Yeah. So all of these are posted on our Facebook page, which is K-State Extension-Wildcat District.
Well, awesome. Well, ladies, is there anything else you would like to cover on or a bit more emphasis on? It's about to be a crazy month, that's for sure.
Yeah, so we're all about to get really busy with fairs. So I've had a chance to cover all my topics and notes I had this morning. So thank you very much for having us on.
Yeah, well, thank you. I hope you guys have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
All right, and thank you for Katie. Good job here on your first live interview. You've done some recorded ones, but you did a great job, I think. So we appreciate you both ladies joining us. Thank you, Davin and both Katies. All right, thanks so much, and we'll look forward to talking at you again soon.